Coming to you from New York City, it's the Friars Club Podcast. Established in 1904, the Friars Club is the birthplace of the celebrity roast and has counted the likes of Frank Sinatra, Jimmy Fallon, Billy Crystal, Barbara Streisand, and Johnny Carson among its members. So come on in for a drink and some laughs with your host, Joe Sibilia.
Hello and welcome to the Friars Club Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Sibilia, and today I am talking to a hero of mine. She's a broadcasting legend, a radio and television talk show host for many, many years, and her name is Sally Jesse Raphael. Sally, thank you so much for joining me today on the Friars Club Podcast. It's such a treat to talk to you.
Thank you.
Now, Sally, before we get any further, you know, we have not one but two things in common, which I'm sure you didn't even realize. We're both redheads, and we both hail from the Lehigh Valley. I grew up in Neffs, Pennsylvania, and I know you were born in Easton, where my grandparents lived for many, many years, so it's nice to talk to a fellow Pennsylvanian.
There you go, and scrapple to you.
Yes, scrapple, exactly. Sally, let me start off by asking, how did you first become involved with the Friars Club? What was your entree into the organization?
I think that's a very good question, because at the time that I joined the Friars Club, there was a movement to include, quote, others, end quote. And I fit three of their criteria for others. A, I wasn't Jewish. B, I was a female. They needed somebody who fit others. So immediately I rose from not being a friar to being the vice president of the club. Now, the vice president is the one who conducts all the meetings when the head of the club is not there. The prior, it's a monastery, and since the gentlemen who were never there, I conducted all the meetings for about 8 years. Very interesting.
So what would go on in these meetings that you would hold as the prior of the Friars Club? And just so people understand, the leadership is referred to by all monastic terms. So there's the abbot, who is the top spot in the club. Then you have the dean. Then you have the prior, and you have many other, the scribe. I could go on and on. But what would go on in these meetings, and what do you remember about sitting in on some of these sacred meetings in the hallowed halls of the monastery?
I will tell you about one meeting in particular. I was hosting all of the 10 people who were the exec committee, to use layman's terms, were there around the table. And I said, we have a proposal from Purdue Chickens that they would like to use our name, the Friars Club Roast, for one of their chickens.
That's great.
Now, this literally is true. I got that letter, and I submitted it to the exec committee. Each one of them stood up and did a chicken joke. And then, after each one had done one chicken joke, being friars, they all did chicken jokes. After 2.5 hours of listening to chicken jokes, he said, this meeting is adjourned, and I will notify the Purdue company that we have not been able to come to an agreement as to whether we should roast one of their chickens.
That would have been great. Now, who were some of the people who were in on this meeting? Do you remember who some of the people were making the chicken jokes?
Freddie Roman. It's very hard for me to remember who at any one meeting was there.
I know over the years you have been very active in the club, and you attended so many different events, and you yourself, as I understand, were honored by the Friars Club. As a matter of fact, on this date, May 15th, 23 years ago, in 2000, and we're recording on May 15th, 2023, what do you remember about being honored by the Friars Club, and how did that come about for you, that you were going to be honored?
Well, they didn't do a roast. they kind of just did an honor thing. And the reason, I think, was that I was female. You know, at a certain point, they found it very hard to say negative things, which is what a roast is, about women. So all I remember was that it was boring.
Would you have preferred to have been roasted? Would you have liked to have sat through that?
Yes, of course. I would have preferred them to have told the truth, as they probably would in today's world. But then they were careful about, you know, that and being Hispanic and being female and, you know, that kind of thing.
Of course, you did yourself attend many of the different roasts over the years. I know you were at the Kelsey Grammer roast in 1996, which was interesting because it had been rescheduled to accommodate Kelsey, who had gone to the Betty Ford Clinic. He was in some sort of an automobile accident and went to rehab. What do you remember about the feeling at that particular roast, where there was this elephant in the room that this is a man who has not been well and he was trying to get better? Do you remember what the feeling was among the Friars at the Kelsey Grammer roast?
I don't think they gave a darn whether he was trying to get better or not. They were sharp. You see, we used the roast to raise money, and we didn't raise it from the people in show business. We raised it from the people who were allowed to be members who were not in show business, but who wanted a club to go to for lunch and to say they were a member of the Friars Club. So the place was packed. I don't remember what hotel. I think it may have been the Hilton, downtown Hilton, New York. But it was packed with people, and they just let it rip. That's all. That's actually all I remember.
Now, did you yourself ever get up and perform at a roast? I know you obviously sat on the dais for many of them, but were you ever one of the people who went up and performed at the roast?
Oh, I wasn't that stupid. Oh, no. You gotta know when to be bright and when not to be bright.
In 1997, you were at the Drew Carey roast, and this was the first roast that the Friars partnered up with Comedy Central for a telecast. As somebody from the television community, what were your feelings about broadcasting the Friars Club roast as opposed to it being an event that's held behind closed doors and only for the Friars?
I voted against it. I thought it was a very bad idea. The idea of roast should be private. It should be you are thrilled to get in, thrilled to buy a table, thrilled to give them the money. If it's broadcast, then there's no cachet about it.
I can understand that. And obviously they used to do, back in the day on the Kraft Music Hall, they had broadcast some roasts, but they were very much sanitized roasts for television. The Comedy Central thing was a whole different thing, and eventually, of course, they started doing their own roasts. And I'm kind of like you. I liked the idea of the mystique of the roasts being behind closed doors. I can totally...
And when they started doing it, they didn't include us. They stole the idea and called it a roast. We sued them, by the way, and we found out we did not own the name roast, even though we sued them. So anybody can say, okay, we're doing a roast.
So the Friars Club, the first mistake was not trademarking the term roast.
That's exactly right.
In 2002, you were present when the Friars Club hosted its salute to New York News veterans. You were there, and Mike Wallace was honored. Now, being in broadcasting all the years you were in broadcasting, did you get to know Mike Wallace at all? I was a huge fan of his work on 60 Minutes.
Yes, I was a huge fan, and though I did not get, unfortunately, I did not get to know him. I started out basically in news. As a foreign correspondent, I worked for Reuters and UPI, and that international was not something. I worked out of Puerto Rico, and I worked mostly Central and South America and the Caribbean. And so I didn't get to meet a lot of the famous newscasters. They were local or mainland U.S. newscasters. I say that because there's still people who don't know that Puerto Rico is part of America. So, you know.
Well, I know that you worked on WIOD in Miami back in the 70s. Were you working with Larry King at the time on WIOD?
I was. It was owned by Cox Broadcasting. And I had come from Puerto Rico, and we went to Miami because I had been fired so many times in Puerto Rico. I just kept getting fired and fired and fired. And finally, I ran out of stations. And the reason we went to Miami was I can work in Spanish and in English. So we went to Miami because that was the place at that time where there was a lot of Spanish and English broadcasting. And I got a job from Big E Nevins, who was the manager of WIOD. By the way, WIOD means Wonderful Isle of Dreams.
A great name.
And it had a phenomenal signal. What it did for me was, there were many people at that time that I did the all-night show.
Right.
And that was my introduction to working an all-night show. The all-night shows in America, in radio, almost all all-night shows were run by a smooth-talking woman who they named Dolly Holliday. And it was sponsored by Holiday Inn. So Dolly Holliday would play music, and she would make very suggestive comments about love and romance. And so when I started, for a couple of days, I think, not very long, I was Dolly Holliday. And then that, because I have the low voice for a woman. And that was something the station, Cox, decided it was going to get rid of. And eventually, in working all night later on NBC and ABC, I took over all the Dolly Holliday spots when I was doing all night radio. Now, I was on, at that point, NBC and ABC, 120% of the country. Now, how do you get on 120% of the country? There are stations that you're on two stations at the same time. So 20% of the country, I was on two stations. But when I did WIOD, I met Jackie Gleason, who was he couldn't sleep.
Right. He was an insomniac, and he was living down in Miami and did his show from there for many years.
Yes. And so he called in to my producer, who I was married to at the time, Carl Sutherland, and had a very happy marriage for 53 years. He called in and said, "I'm Jackie Gleason. Can I talk to Sally?" Well, Carl said, "You're who?" You know, not believing it. One night, he said to me, "Do you shoot pool?" And I said, a little. And he invited me to his house with Minnesota Fats. And I shot pool with Jackie Gleason and Minnesota Fats.
And Jackie Gleason, of course, played Minnesota Fats in the movie The Hustler. I just wanted to add that.
Exactly. But I met Minnesota Fats and played pool with him. My husband didn't shoot, so I haven't shot pool since, so that was one.
Did you win?
Of course not. Are you crazy?
You never know. You might have a hidden talent we didn't know about, Sally.
No. Then I think the other interesting person was the rose tattoo.
Tennessee Williams.
You got it. We finally got it. Okay, so he lived in the Keys. And eventually, what I would say, America's greatest playwrights. Tennessee Williams would sit with me while I did the all-night show. He did a painting of his sister Rose and his dog, and I have that painting. He was absolutely the most silent guy. Tennessee didn't talk much. He was another person I met on WIOD. We also, I'm the first person that called McDonald's and ordered 30,000 hamburgers to go. It was stolen by all kinds of disc jockeys. Another thing we did was when I got bored, I would link my all-night show with other people who were doing all-night shows around the country. And so we didn't have to work so hard. Like, there would be three of us, one in Chicago, one in L.A., depending on the time zone.
Was this in the days where WIOD was situated on a houseboat that had been used on Surfside 6?
No. No, WIOD was never situated on a houseboat. WIOD had its own studios, very big studios in Miami. What was on the houseboat was Larry King in front of the hotel in Miami.
Oh, I see.
The station was never on the houseboat. Larry was on the houseboat.
You have had so many Friars on your television show over the years, and Bert Dubrow had told me that the first celebrity that did your show was Sammy Davis Jr., who was involved with the club.
Yes.
What do you remember about having Sammy on the show?
I went to work. Sammy's mother was Puerto Rican. And so I, having started and spent 28 years in Puerto Rico, my career is really a Puerto Rican career. I knew Sammy. And I was also reviewing shows for Variety, which is the show business newspaper. When Sammy was in Miami, I was reviewing shows. And I went to kind of to work for him at the time that he was on the Rat Pack. And the reason was we did the Variety show. And Sammy had to take a rest at night. So when he took a rest from doing the Variety show, I would be the host, filling in for Sammy. And I then did special things for him for, I guess I worked for Sammy for about 4 years. When the Rat Pack did the Radio City Music Hall, I was there for him in his dressing room helping him. I would say that Sammy Davis Jr. was probably the single most talented human being that I've ever met. This man could do it all. He could dance, he could sing, he could act. There wasn't anything in show business that Sammy couldn't do. The other single most talented person is Hugh Jackman, but I've never met Hugh Jackman.
It's never too late, Sally. You still have a shot at meeting Hugh Jackman, I think. We'll have to try and make that happen.
I've never missed a Hugh Jackman show on Broadway, never.
And Carol Burnett you had on a couple times. What were your thoughts about her?
I love her. There is a person who is comfortable, am I correct? Non-aggressive, but pleasant and comfortable.
And she's still amazing at 90 years old, and she was great when I had her on the show. Somebody who was a little aggressive, I was watching this episode of your show recently, was Jerry Lewis.
The worst chair I ever sat in.
It is.
You explain. Here, you see if you sit like this.
I sit like this.
What is that? I mean, you have to such a flat ass to sit in this chair.
That's right. We have an exec producer named Bert Dubrow who says he can make anybody sit up straight. He designed this thing. What does he know about furniture design? You sit
over?
Like this.
Is it over?
It's okay. Anyway, are you happier than you've ever been?
Until I sat in this chair.
What do you remember about having Jerry on your show?
Yeah, Jerry was, you're right. He, at the latter part of his life, well, Bert and I both knew Jerry. Bert knew him better than I did, Bert Dubrow, the exec producer. But he wasn't terribly nice. Can I be tactful and put it that way?
However you feel the need to put it, Sally, I'll take your word for it. He wasn't nice to you specifically, or just not nice in general?
Just not nice in general.
That's a shame.
And I think that was part, I attribute that more to his being ill than I attribute it to his nature.
No, I think that would affect anybody. He had so many health battles over the years, from his back pain, his heart issues. I can see where that would impact somebody on a day-to-day basis. Let's go directly back to the Friars for a second. So when you would go into the Friars Club, who would you like to hang out with when you were there? And who were some of the people that you would see around the Friars Club? And what would you like to do when you go and visit
the
Friars?
Well, I didn't have... I was working so hard doing 3 shows a day. That I really didn't have much time to do anything. Occasionally, I would go to their breakfast at Yom Kippur because it was the greatest spread you could get in New York. You didn't have to be Jewish to accept that. I would go occasionally to dinner, but I would bring somebody not from the Friars Club. I would just bring friends who might find it interesting.
So when you would go, what would you like to eat?
Oh, that's a great question. I, at that time, was a meat eater, which I do not eat beef now, and I was a great deal heavier. So I would say that I would eat their huge, I think it was the roast beef that was probably the best thing. They had roast beef on the weekends.
Oh, that does sound good. See, now after this, I got to go get roast beef. You're making me hungry, Sally.
Roast beef, baked potatoes, ear of corn.
You were talking about just how busy your schedule was in hosting a daily talk show, as you did for so many years, taping 3 shows a day. What was your schedule like when you were hosting your television show all those years on a day-to-day basis?
We did the show for so many years. For part of the 5 years we were in St. Louis, because we owned 11 stations, a small network there. And then we went to New Haven, and then we came to New York. Before we came to New York, I did 3 shows on Monday, 3 on Tuesday, 3 on Wednesday. Wednesday night at 6 o'clock, I flew to Nice, France on Delta Airways at 6 o'clock at night, arrived 6 a.m., went to the Corsalia, which is the center of Nice, had breakfast, and spent Thursday morning, Thursday all day, Friday all day, Saturday all day, and Sunday all day, and came home Sunday night in time to go to the studio on Monday morning to do the 3 shows. So I was literally living 2.5 days in New York and the rest of the time in Nice, France.
And I know that you were a little bit unhappy with the direction that the show took towards the end. It was becoming the trend with Jerry Springer and Maury Povich, and you were sort of forced into replicating that format. What do you think of the direction that television has taken in the past, I'd say, 20 years or so, since your show went off the air with reality television, with all these other shows that are on now that are in some ways far more outlandish than the shows that Springer and Maury Povich hosted?
Yeah. Well, you know, when I criticized that, there was the company, NBC Universal, own three shows, Sally, Maury, and Jerry. And when I criticized that, people said, oh, they fired you and kept the two guys. That's sour grapes. So I am hesitant to even express to you anything that would be negative. For whatever reason, they decided that I shouldn't be there. And my reasoning was I felt that it was demeaning and it was using people who were less intelligent, less educated. And I felt that that was something I didn't want to be part of.
You have had such a storied career in broadcasting. And obviously now we are in this era of this new digital media. We're doing a podcast right now and streaming, and there's so many other options. What do you think and what do you hope to see for the future of media and communication?
Well, first of all, there's a saying, be careful what you ask for. I remember when we used to have NBC, ABC, CBS, and I guess DuMont. Okay. And all of us would sit around and say, okay, these four guys control everything. Oh my God, wouldn't it be wonderful if they were gone, because they're always telling us what to do. But at that time, America, because we all had just that to watch, we were cohesive as a country. We all listened to the same news. We all had a cohesiveness. And what we wished for was many, many other people to buy and own streaming services and so forth and so forth, and channels and so forth. And you know what? That's when we really got divided as a people. When we only had just a few, we were together. And now there's very little chance. You can't put the rabbit back in the hat, as it were. So that's why I say be careful what you ask for. I'm one of the people who ask for it, so, you know.
I think you definitely make a valid point there. You don't have that shared experience that the nation used to have, and it's...
We had a shared experience. You pretty much, everybody got the same view of something, and then it all went to hell in a handbag. So there you go.
Sally, before I let you go, let me ask you, why do you think that the Friars Club, after all these years, still proves to be a source of fascination to so many people, both inside and outside of show business?
Part of it was the privacy that it maintained. That'll surprise people. It maintained a lot of privacy. So there was something fascinating about show business going on in that building that people were absolutely, you know, really interested in. And they were intrigued by the privacy of it. The other thing is that they didn't only allow people in show business. They allowed other people to join. And that made it very interesting, you know, because the people that they invited to join were really captains of industry and so forth. And I found that that was a good thing. What I do now is I do parts in movies. I play, I'm acting. And I've done 53 movies under different names, wearing different makeup, different hair. So that's what I do with my life. So I have a lifetime. I don't have to pay dues. I'm an emeritus. That's pretty good.
You're doing better than me, Sally. I'm 27. I guess I have time to...
Yeah, but guess you can.
Attain that status. Well, before we go, I do want to take a moment. I want to thank Patrick Hartz and Bert Dubrow for putting me in touch with you, because it really has been such an honor to talk to you. And let me ask you, who is just such a storied veteran of broadcasting, how did I do?
I think you did probably better than anyone who's ever interviewed me.
Really?
You've done your homework.
I really appreciate that.
About one thing.
What?
I spent, I would say 30, 40 years in radio, and I have been turned down by the Radio Hall of Fame every year. They bring up my name, and every year I'm not admitted.
How is that? I find that outrageous that you haven't been inducted.
I don't know how you could have been in 120% of the country, how you could have done that much radio for that many years and never be admitted. So that's the only thing you missed. But you did your homework, and you did an excellent job. Bert said you would. You're a young Bert. You know your stuff. But remember, there are very, 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 very few of you. Most people your age couldn't give a darn.
Well, there's hope yet. Maybe I'll be able to change some minds through this podcast and open people up to new horizons in that sense. And your kind words are greatly appreciated, and it's not lost on me that you would say that. So, Sally, I do hope you'll keep in touch, because it really has been an honor and a pleasure to talk to you today. And thank you for making the time to be on the show. You are a fabulous guest and a legendary broadcaster. And if not in the Radio Hall of Fame, you certainly fall into the Friars Club Hall of Fame and my Hall of Fame, Sally.
Thank you, Joe. I really appreciate it. Goodbye.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Friars Club podcast. Please be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. For more information on the Friars Club, please visit friarsclub.com. We hope to see you there.